news, weather, truth, and fun. We're iHub Radio, homegrown in the Coachella Valley. For a fresh take on the news with Anita Rufus, you won't know if you don't listen.
And I thank you so much for tuning in. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. And I am live on Sunday mornings from 10 to noon. Today is March 15th. And not to put too fine a point on it, I mean, obviously we're going to talk about the coronavirus and it, especially the impact here locally in the Coachella Valley, but all around the country. But not just that, but I've been trying to find things that I can lighten my mood with a little bit, or things that are interesting that we would not otherwise focus on if all we're focusing on is panic. And by the way, just for the record, you know, I care a lot about the use of words, and there is a difference, a big difference between panic and overreaction. I don't mind that we're in a time where we might say we are overreacting because we feel so hit out of left field and blindsided by all of this, and it is happening so rapidly, and we feel as if maybe nobody's fully in charge, or at least maybe finally someone is fully in charge. But there are other things about what's going on that I find interesting. And so I want to talk about some of those today, in addition to just the stuff that, you know, updating things you need to know. So today is March 15th. Do you know what day that is? Does the concept the Ides of March strike a bell? In 44 BC, on this day, March 15th, which is known as the Ides of March, Julius Caesar was assassinated. 44 BC. Well, this is an important day. So, one of the things that I'm going to intersperse what I'm talking about today with is the fact that this is having an impact on our individual lives, mine included, of course. Silly little things like, okay, I get it. Every time you walk in the house, whatever you think you did or did not touch or be near, every time you walk in the house, go in and wash your hands with hot water and soap. Duh. Better safe than sorry at that point. Yes, it's true that this virus can last on clothing for 48 hours. When you come home from being out somewhere where you're around other people and you don't know for sure whether anybody might have the virus and not yet be showing signs, or where, as it happened with me this week, I was standing in line. I had to go and buy some food, some groceries, my normal weekly grocery shopping. And I'm standing in line to check out with about 7 or 8 items. And behind me, I hear somebody coughing. Well, there is a part of you that goes, whoa, what does that mean? But one of the stories that I heard that really made me think, Asian kids are being bullied in school where there is school taking place, or in their neighborhoods. And it made me think, as Americans, generally speaking, we don't know how to discriminate one Asian from another. We don't know whether somebody is Chinese or Korean or South Vietnamese or Thai, or, I mean, seriously, we just don't think that way. So maybe it's a learning experience. Maybe the fact that Asian kids are being bullied is a chance for parents or teachers or whoever to educate kids about the fact that blind prejudice doesn't help anything. Now, I think some of these kids are hearing things at home like, the Chinese did this. I have a friend who received an email from a friend of his. And this email was forwarding a conspiracy theory that not only did the Chinese develop this in some lab in that far off place where this all started, not only did they develop it in some lab, but that the technology for it originally came from the United States. So I'm reading this thing and I'm thinking, who is this guy? Where'd he get this information? This is crazy. And then I click on one of the links in his article where he's linking to somebody who supposedly supplied some of this information. And he's quoting an article written by Alex Jones, the ultimate conspiracy theorist nut, who I might add was recently arrested for being drunk or something. And I said to my friend who had sent this to me, you need to send an email back to your friend that says, don't send around things like this. Not only is it ridiculous and untrue, but it reflects badly on you that you would send it out to people. Stuff like that is going on. Meanwhile, I was listening to somebody explain this idea about the difference between panic and overreaction, or appropriate reaction, perhaps, in this case. But this person was talking from a psychological point of view, which always interests me because as human beings, we do have certain things in common at this point in our evolution in the way we deal with certain kinds of issues. And this person was talking about risk perception psychology. That it makes a difference, for example, if some kind of perceived threat is near or far. You know, if you're finding out, for example, as I just learned this morning, that here in the Coachella Valley, there are now at least 14 cases locally that have been confirmed, including one that was reported this morning or last night in a nursing home in Rancho Mirage. And we know that that puts at risk a whole lot of other people who are at risk anyway because of their age or situation. But we know that the incidence of this is now in 49 of the 50 states, and the numbers are escalating very quickly, and appropriate reaction as opposed to panic makes sense. We are all in this together. Unlike, I might add, if there was one thing that totally got to me this past week with regard to the way the president, not the administration, but the president handled all of this from the beginning, as if somehow or other this was all about him.
Well, they were making it about him because they were criticizing him.
Get over it. You're in charge. But the fact that, if you'll recall, less than a week ago, that cruise ship that had been off the coast of California, Governor Newsom made arrangements to be able to get that ship to dock, and very carefully and in an incredible operation with hazmat suits and all of that, they got the people off that ship. And many of them are either have tested positive or are still in quarantine. But the president's response to that ship being off the coast and needing to come in, and Americans on board that ship who were pleading, get us off here. The president thought it was okay to keep that ship off the coast. And he actually said, I like the numbers where they are. It's like for him, how many people get reported to have tested positive or how many people have died is somehow or other like ratings. And he likes the numbers where they are as of a week ago. Well, speaking of numbers, this for me is the best indication that we are barely on the front side of the climb of the number of cases that will be reported. And they are hoping and putting in place finally the kinds of responses that will hopefully flatten out that curve. But in the meantime, Wednesday, there were 1,200 cases. Thursday, there were 1,600. Saturday, there were 2,400. As of today, there are more than 3,000. And yet, so far, nationwide, there have been fewer, far fewer, I might add, than 30,000 total tests to try and identify coronavirus in individuals who apparently have some kind of symptoms. That is a failure of both planning and execution in a crisis. But when the president first went on and did that speech where he read it off the teleprompter, it was like a hostage video. And it occurred to me that he reads whatever's on the teleprompter badly. He's not a good reader. And he reads it as if he's never seen it before, with in terms of emphasis or where you stop or where you modify your voice tone so that you sound a little more concerned in certain parts and where you sound definitive and in control in other parts. He reads it, but he doesn't own it. And that comes across so clearly. So we've had more than 3,000 cases as of this morning, the latest numbers that I've heard, 60 deaths so far, and we are nowhere near the top of the list worldwide with regard to how many cases, and that's partly because we don't know. The number will surely go up. We've been told that by all the experts. The House did pass a coronavirus aid bill, and it has some things that will really be helpful, and it was negotiated with the administration in the person of Steve Mnuchin with Nancy Pelosi, and the president has said he will support it, but now we need the Senate to vote on it, and it's possible that some senators may want to add even more stuff. But that bill will provide free testing for anyone who needs it, sick pay for workers who don't otherwise get it, enhanced unemployment benefits for people who may be without a job as a result of the changing economic environment, and bolstering food programs, because there's a lot of people who, if they can't bring home salary, they're not going to be able to eat or feed their kids.
Live from Palm Springs, she calls it as she sees it. Local talk that's moving the needle. Here's Anita Rufus on iHub Radio.
And again, I thank you so much for joining me. You know, one of the things I noticed on my drive over here to the station to be able to do today's show, one of the things I noticed was local radio stations, you can't get any current news. Weekend shows are syndicated, and they're things like, you know, how to fix your car or how to fix your computer, things like that. And there's nothing wrong with those kinds of programs. But local radio stations are so used to just having it all loaded into a computer, and maybe there's one person who pushes buttons from time to time. I did notice that we have, at least on my radio in my car, I have two separate NPR stations, National Public Radio. One of them was completely nothing but static, off the air. And the other one was replaying over and over and over again that it was an emergency radio station, and that if there was some reason to have to listen to something about a local emergency, that was the station to listen to, but that all they were doing was telling you that. They weren't telling you anything about any local emergency. Some of you have awakened to watch the news and see that airports, you know, when the president said that he was putting in a travel ban of all travel from Europe for 30 days, well, he didn't really give any details. And so Americans, like crazy, were scrambling to try and get flights home before that deadline would kick in. Well, then finally the administration, not the president, but the administration said, well, wait a minute. It exempts American citizens. It exempts permanent legal residents and their families. They can come home with proper screening. And it is the people at the airport who are exposed when they're trying to screen other people. And many of them have come down with this. But people who did manage to get flights and are coming back, there were only, I think, 13 airports, was it, where those flights were allowed to land, bringing people back from overseas. Atlanta, Dallas, Detroit, Newark, Honolulu, New York, L.A., O'Hare in Chicago, SeaTac in Seattle, San Francisco, Washington Dulles in D.C., Boston's Logan Airport, and Miami. Those were the only airports where they felt there was adequate ability to screen people coming in. They are major airline hubs, and so everybody coming in was supposed to go to one of those airports, get screened, and then be able to take connecting flights to finally get home. Well, the pictures you're seeing this morning of places like O'Hare in Chicago, if you'll recall, we've all been told to, like, socially distance. Don't touch other people and don't stand right next to other people and be very cautious. Meanwhile, a huge airport like Dallas-Fort Worth, those great big huge corridors, they are jammed wall to wall with people shoulder to shoulder because they didn't set it up for the testing to be able to be done in any organized way. And you've got hundreds of thousands of people who were out of the country who are trying to come home. Some waits in some airports are 4 hours or more. And these are people who have come in on international flights. They're exhausted. And if they get out of line because they have to go to the bathroom or because they have kids with them, what do they do then? Meanwhile, the Department of Defense has halted domestic travel for all service members and civilian employees and their families. This is the equivalent of responding appropriately to a threat of illness that requires that each of us rethinks the way we are living our lives day to day. There are little things you can do to make a difference, but just even something as simple as you go out to get something out of your car where your car is parked in the parking lot. Or you go out to your car after you've been to the drugstore and your car has been in a parking lot. For what it's worth, you don't know who walked past your car in that parking lot and sneezed. You don't. And on metal surfaces, this virus can live for 5 to 7 days on metal surfaces. Wipe off car door handles, gas pumps, wear gloves, or immediately afterwards clean your hands with some kind of a cleansing cloth. And when you return home from anywhere, even out to the parking lot to get something from your car, wash your hands. You don't need to be crazy. It is okay to be around other people or to go out to take care of things you have to take care of. But on the other hand, take precautions. Not only should you not want to get sick, but you don't want to carry it to someone else who may be in a more compromised position. This is Anita Rufus, and this is iHub Radio.
News, weather, and a couple of dozen loudmouths. This is iHub Radio. She calls it as she sees it. Now, here's Anita Rufus.
Thank you so much for tuning in. I am here live every Sunday from 10 to noon. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal, and you are listening to iHub Radio. By the way, you can call in if you'd like to get in on the program, or you can just tell me about how this is affecting your everyday life. 760-544-8255. 544-8255. Or you can email studio@ihubradio.com and we will be happy to respond to a comment or a question. I was talking earlier about the travel ban that was put in place. And, you know, it's kind of cart before the horse or closing the door to the barn after the horses have left or something like that. But there are some questions about just normal, everyday things that we all have to deal with at some point. So one of the questions people had was, well, I booked a flight to Europe and it was a cheap flight. What do I do now? Well, as it turns out, Delta Airlines, for one, is waiving ticket change fees for passengers who are traveling to or from or through Europe or the United Kingdom through May 31st. But you had to buy your tickets before March 11th. If you bought your tickets after March 11th, 4 days ago, don't try and get a free change of your ticket. United Airlines, same thing. Anyone scheduled to fly up until April 30th who wants to change their travel plans can do so without paying a fee. American Airlines, you had to have bought it before March 11th and be scheduled to travel up through May 31st, but you don't have to pay a change fee. You can change that ticket to a different flight later on in the future. You just have to, for American, you have to complete your travel within a year of the date you originally purchased the ticket. But at least airlines are responding. Now, United is cutting their flights by about 40%. And again, this is the impact that this is going to have economically. It's not just that the stock market went crazy for lots of reasons. And then it came back a bit. And it will find a way to settle out, but we're already technically in a bear market because the market over the last couple of weeks fell by over 20%. Yes, it will probably come back. It always does. But in the meantime, if you're one of those people who is not going to get your salary and doesn't know how it's going to work for the government to supplement whatever you are used to getting, and you want to cash in some of your investment, your IRA or whatever, which is invested in the stock market, it may not be worth as much as it was last month. And the truth is, and we know that this is always the case in this country, low income and low wage earners are going to bear the brunt of the economic impact. People who work in industries like the travel industry, the leisure industry, the hospitality industry, restaurants, people who work for tips, excuse me, people without any access to sick leave. You know, many employees who are in those low-income, low-wage earner categories, they got to choose between their health and their paycheck. The bill that the House passed does not include yet relief for mortgages so that people don't lose their home, for God's sake, while all this is going on, merely because they're not bringing in any salary or wages. More than 32 million people in this country who work don't have access to paid sick leave. Only 31% of workers with salaries in the bottom 10% have any kind of paid sick leave. And almost 50% of workers in the leisure and hospitality industry have access to paid sick leave, but that's just under half. Now, due to the fact that these are the people who interface with the public the most, they're at risk not just for getting sick, but for spreading the illness. And as is typical to realize in our country, Black and Hispanic workers are more than twice as likely to earn poverty-level wages compared to white counterparts. Roughly 8% of all Black and Hispanic workers earn wages below the poverty level. Only 4% of white workers. And that's a lot of people, regardless. And women in particular, women of color, are going to get hit the hardest. 10% of Black women, 9% of Hispanic women are classified as working poor, compared to only 3.5% of white men. And guess who has to stay home or worry about childcare or what they're going to do to make sure their kids are doing whatever they have to do not to lose too much ground given that schools are closed? It's women who are going to be in those positions more, certainly more than men. Now, the president said that one of the things that was kind of slowing up getting this bill done about taking care of people, the bill that was passed by the House and hopefully will be passed by the Senate on Monday, the president was pushing for a payroll tax cut. And yes, that would have helped a lot of people who pay payroll tax have a little extra money in their pocket. There have been some people who have suggested, even some conservatives, that rather than make people jump through hoops and go through red tape, government ought to just send everybody a check to help them get through this. And it made me immediately think of Andrew Yang, who believes in a basic income sent to every American, $1,000 a month. And listen, there are people who would be able to put food on the table and pay the rent if they got $1,000 a month. Especially if they can't work. But that payroll tax cut would have cost the government $90 billion a month, over $1 trillion a year. And it would directly affect Social Security because payroll taxes are going in to support Social Security. That amount is more than what it cost to bail out Wall Street in 2008 or give the stimulus in 2009 that brought back the economy. And it only helps those who are working right now. So that's not a good idea. Now, we've heard an awful lot about what's been going on in other countries. China, the rate at which people are getting this illness is way down, and they finally stepped up and acted definitively after not telling the rest of the world what was going on for a while. And that's a shame. But in Italy, they literally shut down the country. all businesses except grocery stores and pharmacies closed. Because Italy had more than half of the confirmed coronavirus cases in Europe. Well, now Spain is next on the list and catching up. And one of the things that came out of Italy, which does have an excellent public health service, the virus outbreak in Italy had got so bad so fast that some doctors are now practicing what they call catastrophe medicine. And this is something, you know, I've done a lot of work for over 25 years on end-of-life issues. And there's an ethical issue that takes place at end of life, or, for example, when you have a medical system that is so totally overwhelmed that it cannot handle what is going on. And in Italy, that became the case. And so doctors are literally having to make ethical decisions, practicing this thing that they're calling catastrophe medicine, to determine which severely ill patients should or should not be receiving care based on available resources. Obviously, if somebody's in their 90s and ill and in frail health to begin with, how much are you going to spend in terms of time, money, and equipment if you don't have enough equipment for the person in the next bed who is 60 years old and still working or running a business and can still have a productive time in the community? And I'm not diminishing the fact that, you know, there's a lot of people in their 90s who are definitely well worth keeping around. But if you had to make that decision, on what basis would you make it? These are very difficult medical ethics questions, and these are the kinds of things that we need to be prepared to deal with. And this is where bureaucrats, you know, what the president and Fox News opinion hosts like to call the deep state. Yes, we don't always like bureaucrats because they have too many rules and they make everybody jump through hoops and they don't have any independent thinking because everything is run from a central yada yada. I get all of that, and I don't disagree with a lot of it. But the fact is, those are the people who do have in place the kinds of rules and regulations that allow things to get done based on the fact that the government has a role to play. And these are the people with the experience and the background. But given that, I don't know if you saw the press conference yesterday where Eunice Alcindor, who is a wonderful reporter for National Public Radio, she asked the president a question about the fact that the pandemic group that was part of the National Security Council had been fired. The president said he didn't know anything about that. Well, then they found a videotape of him in 2018 justifying that because he said, we don't need to spend that money. What are the chances of something like that happening anyway? Well, those are the people who knew not only what the chances were, but what would need to be done if a pandemic happened. And they were also there in the National Security Council because what if there was some major event with, you know, chemical weapons? I mean, that's what they were there for. The president didn't want to spend the money. Well, those things come home to roost. This is Anita Rufus on iHub Radio.
because you only think you know the truth. Striking blows against the corporate talk radio monolith in the Coachella Valley. iHub Radio. Participation encouraged, but not required. Here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, I was talking about the dismantling in 2018 of the pandemic experts on staff as part of the National Security Council in the White House. And they were charged with preparing for whether and when a pandemic might hit the United States. Trump's elimination of that office, along with, by the way, his proposed cuts to the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, he didn't see the threat of pandemics. You know, what are the chances? You can never really think that's going to happen. He is quoted as saying. So the White House dissolved the office, leaving us less prepared for something like what's going on right now. Because that group was set up to be, as it was described by one of the first directors of that group, that it was supposed to be the smoke alarm to get ahead of emergencies. So when the president was asked on Friday whether closing the NSC Global Health Unit slowed our response, the president said that was a nasty question. His administration had acted quickly and saved lives. I don't know anything about it. Well, the fact is, they do have him on tape knowing exactly about it and saying, you know, we don't need to spend that money. So Italian officials said last night that their cases have jumped 20%. They now have more than 21,000 cases. Spain and France are putting a lot of restrictions on public life because the number of cases in those countries are escalating. And for now, distance from other people has become the main defense, the main thing we can do for ourselves. Not going to the store and emptying the shelves of everything you can get your hands on as if toilet paper were the most important thing in the world. I mean, come on. I saw people at the market yesterday buying multiple cases of bottled water. You can drink the water out of the tap, for God's sake. But distance from other people is the first line of defense. The symptoms you should be watching for, 88% of people who get this have fever. About 68% have a dry cough. The symptoms that might follow those two frontline concerns are fatigue, thick mucus in your lungs, shortness of breath. Somebody said, hey, every once in a while during the day, take a deep breath and hold it for a minimum of 10 seconds. If you can do that without coughing, then your lungs are probably not compromised. You might have a sore throat, headache, chills, and you want to distance yourself from other people if you do have symptoms, including your family and your pets. If you can, go into a separate bedroom and bathroom. Call your doctor. Don't go to the emergency room unless you're really ill. Call 911. But call your doctor if you believe you may have some of those symptoms. And especially if you're over 60 or you have underlying conditions like diabetes or a heart condition or autoimmune disease. Don't share dishes and glasses with anyone. Wash your hands often, hot water and soap. And stay hydrated. You need to make sure that you have enough water in your system. Now, there is a CDC hotline number, and I will give it to you right now. You can dial 1-800-273-8255. 1-800-CDC-INFO, I-N-F-O, 1-800-CDC-INFO, or in numbers, that's 800-232-4636, 1-800-232-4636. Now, interestingly enough, Germany has not had a huge escalation of cases. They've had only 3 deaths out of over 1,900 recorded cases that as of Wednesday. I'm not sure what the numbers are today. But Germany has some built-in advantages. They have a widespread network of regional laboratories, so they've been able to do extensive testing. And they have one of the most expensive public healthcare systems in the world, with national healthcare insurance for everyone in Germany. And it makes a difference. And I would imagine in the debate going to take place tonight between Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden, they are definitely going to talk about, Sanders is going to keep pushing against the fact that we don't have national health insurance, and therefore not everybody has access, and that's part of the reason people are getting sick. So I want to share a wonderful story with you very quickly, because for me, this made me cry. I'm driving in the car, and I'm listening to an interview on the radio, on NPR, and I start crying in the car. All right, I cry at almost everything. But in Italy, where they have had people quarantined and stuck in the places that they live, and it has really been difficult, I'm listening to an interview with a young woman who's talking about how they're all going crazy, stuck in their apartments, and one woman came out of her apartment onto her little balcony and started to sing the Italian national anthem out toward the street. And then this young woman who was being interviewed went out on the balcony and started playing her saxophone and played Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And other people came out onto their balconies, one with an accordion. There's video of this up online, and it is beautiful. We are all in this together. You don't have to profiteer off of the fact that other people are willing to pay more money for toilet paper because the stores don't have any, and you're willing to make money off other people's suffering. Shame on you. You should be in jail for that. Meanwhile, the president inadvertently told a truth this week. He said, I don't take any responsibility at all. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal, live every Sunday from 10 to noon here on iHub Radio.